It's early on a Sunday morning, so you know what that means. Grinders, once again, it is our time. After a week off, it is the Sunday Morning Grind Podcast, episode number 14. Josh Taylor, Greg Finley, Greg, are we just calling this the Neil O'Donnell episode?
That was the first one that came to mind.
We're just jumping straight to that one?
Yep.
It was either Neil O'Donnell or Chris Kunitz, and I figured O'Donnell was just the easier target.
I'm cool with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Neil O'Donnell episode of the Sunday Morning Grind Podcast. We got a lot to get to. Quite a few things happened since the last time we were in this space talking together, Greg. The NFL draft happened. A lot of drama in the NFL that wasn't draft related, at least not with this draft, but we'll get into that too. And we got to talk about A, the NHL, B, we got to talk about MLB replay because that's a mess. And then C, we got to play our favorite news headline game, Is This a Thing? So we got plenty to discuss. Let's start with the NFL draft. I know you and I talked throughout the course of this thing. I got to give you credit, by the way, because you did a first round like mock NFL draft and you nailed a lot of it. So I'm going to give you this space to take your victory lap because you crushed this first round of the draft.
I think I got six out of the first seven, and whenever Denver took Surtain, it screwed everything up. I was rolling, and then whenever Denver took Surtain, it was game over. Because then Dallas had to move up and take somebody else, and then, you know, you had those trades, and everybody that I had, it just moved down a pick, or moved down a couple of picks, because Surtain went earlier than I expected. But I had Lawrence, I had Wilson, I had Pitts, I had Chase, I had Waddle, and I had Sewell. So,
unbelievable.
Six out of seven.
Yeah, that's nuts. That's
after that,
nuts.
It got really ugly really fast.
I got like the first five, and after that I was like, it may or may not happen. I'd screwed up with five, or I screwed up with six, because it was Waddle, and I had the wrong Alabama receiver. I had Devontae Smith instead of Jalen Waddle. I had him flopped, and I'm like, I didn't realize it until it was too late.
Well, Smith was the better receiver last year, but it seemed like people were higher on Waddle.
Yeah, Waddle was supposed to be the guy, and then he got hurt. Mm-hmm. And then, like, Devontae Smith just kind of went and rose above everybody and lit up the whole damn country and then won the Heisman Award. So it was just ridiculous after
right,
that.
Right.
So that was really the difference between the two.
Yeah, and I thought that the Lions were going to end up getting Sewell because I didn't think the Bengals would make the right decision and take the guy that's going to protect Joe Burrow. They went for the weapon. And I don't think it was a bad choice to take Ja'Marr Chase. You got the LSU connection, but I just knew they were going to bangle it and not take Sewell.
My thing was, I knew they were going to do that, but for the reason you just mentioned. I knew they would go with Ja'Marr Chase because you had the Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase connection. Mm-hmm. It just made sense. Because my thing was, if I were in that position, I would probably take Penei Sewell. But if you can get a Ja'Marr Chase, a guy that's familiar with their quarterback, and you know that pair is going to be your pair for the next several seasons, and you don't have to ask that question, who's our number one receiver going to be? And, oh, yeah, by the way, you still have T. Higgins, and, oh, yeah, by the way, you still have Tyler Boyd. That's a good problem to have because you now have that set aside, and you're like, all right, we got this wealth of receivers to throw to. They did sign two tackles during the offseason. But they knew who their two starting guys are going to be. I think they signed one, and another guy's getting promoted, so to speak. So they knew what they were going to do at tackle, and they were comfortable enough with those two guys to take Ja'Marr Chase. So it's not like they just left that position completely bare and naked and went and drafted a receiver because they thought it was a good idea. They actually have their guys in place already at both tackle positions, and they said, okay, since we've done that now we can draft Ja'Marr Chase and have the guy that has the connection with our quarterback. So it made sense to me.
Agreed. Yeah. And again, I thought that Kyle Pitts was going to go to the Falcons. That just seemed too much of a home run pick. Even though I don't think they needed to go with that route, Kyle Pitts might end up being a wide receiver.
For all intents and purposes, he's a Jimmy Graham type dude.
Yeah.
That's how I look at him.
I look at him as the guy for Evans for the Bucks,
Mike Evans,
who was the tight end at Texas A&M.
Well, I mean, he played outside of Texas A&M. He was Johnny Manziel's favorite target,
right?
But for all intents and purposes, he's the body of a tight end playing outside and just playing jump ball down the sideline. And I remind people of this often. They're like, "Oh, Johnny Manziel was so great in college." I'm like, "Slow down." Johnny Manziel had Mike Evans to throw to on the outside, who all but one team could contend with, And the only team that could was the one team that he couldn't beat, and that was LSU. Why? Because LSU puts NFL freaking defensive talent on the field every year on the defensive line, at the linebacker position, and a defensive back. And that just happened to be the one team that can slow Mike Evans down. Surprise? Not to me. So, yeah, like when you look at all that as far as, you know, body types and like you know, players that remind me of, that's who he reminds me of. He's that Jimmy Graham, Mike Evans type of mold of just body who can split wide and just completely torture you time and time again.
He's going to be fun. I think
he is.
I think you pair him with Julio and Calvin Ridley.
Yes.
Dude, three SEC guys on the same field.
And you're in SEC country?
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah.
You know the fans are going to love that in Atlanta. They're going to love it.
And the NFC South is taking a huge hit with Drew Brees retiring.
Yes.
So the Saints aren't going to be as powerful. The Bucs are still going to be the Bucs. Okay.
They literally brought the exact same team back.
Yeah.
They were just like, yeah, let's run it back. Tom, and I'll bet that they asked Tom Brady, like, you want to bring everybody back? And Brady's like, yeah, let's bring them all back.
I mean, we won the Super Bowl. Why not?
It's like Bruce Arians talking to Tom Brady is like that scene in Ocean's 11 where they're trying to put the entire group together and George Clooney's asking Brad Pitt, you think we need one more? And Brad Pitt doesn't say anything. He's like, all right, we'll get one more. That was Bruce Arians talking to Tom Brady. He's like, okay, we got all these guys back. And he looks at Tom Brady and says, you think we need AB? And Tom Brady doesn't say anything. He goes, all right, we'll get it. Oh, yeah, and we'll go get Blaine Gabbert, too. Your boy's back. He's the backup again. Blaine Gabbert's back.
They draft Kyle Trask, and I'm like, oh, I think the Blaine train's done. And then you'd send me a message.
You're
like,
your boy.
They're bringing Blaine train back.
Blaine the train is still moving.
Look, man.
He's got more coal left in the engine. That's
they
amazing.
They need a guy that can hand the ball off when they're up 42-0 and Brady's tired of doing it.
Exactly.
That is his job.
Someone's got to take all the snaps in minicamp and training camp because we know Tom Brady's not taking it. So it might as well be Blaine Gabbert. That's all I'm saying.
They brought the same defense back, too. How is that fair? Who was their best linebacker? Was it Shaq Barrett?
Shaq Barrett, you can honestly make the case as Lavonte David.
I think it was David. David was going to be a free agent.
Right.
And they went and they're like, we'll bring Lavonte back.
Yeah, like they Tampa's one of the few teams that has two really number ones at linebacker.
Yes.
Like you got one and one A. It's really ridiculous. So all that athleticism they have, and like their defensive backfield was considered the weak link, and all those guys bought out. So it's like, all right, well, you might just bring, you know, run that whole thing back. I mean, it's like playing pickup basketball at the gym.
Yep.
They beat everybody that played against them, and they're like, all right, who got next? And then, like, the whole gym switches out, and they're like, well, I guess we're still here. I guess we're still playing because no one's beating them yet, so might as well keep running the games back.
It's not fair.
It's not. It's really not.
As if Tom Brady needs anything more to help him, they continue to just add on. And they helped themselves out in the draft by taking Joe Tyron, the edge rusher out of Washington.
Yep, they just completely beefed up that defensive line, which honestly did not need much beefing because it's already pretty good, and he just brought a whole other body in there to wreak havoc. So good on them.
What were the Saints thinking with the Peyton Turner pick out of Houston? I don't think anybody had that as a first-round pick.
I think New Orleans was expecting to trade up, and when they couldn't move, it was just like, all right, who's on our board? That guy's there. Okay, we'll take him. That's what it felt like to me, because we knew going in there had been reports that the Saints were interested in trying to trade up to maybe get a quarterback. And then after pick number 11, it's like, well, that's not happening. Now what? Well, especially after pick 15, because, you know, New England, of course, Bill Belichick gets the one thing that he wants freaking handed to him. Hey, here's Nick Saban's quarterback, your good buddy that you did an HBO documentary with. So you guys can actually, you know, collaborate again and talk about your quarterback. Here's his guy right here. Take him at 15. We knew that was happening, right?
As soon as the 49ers took Trey Lance, it was like, all right, so Mac Jones is going to the Patriots, right?
When Justin Fields went to the Bears at 11, and I knew Dallas was going to go defense because their defense gave up the most points like ever in franchise history, I was like, we know Dallas is going defense. We know the Chargers would go offensive lineman because we knew Justin Herbert needed somebody to block his blind side. And we knew the Jets would go line because they needed to, because they had already gotten a quarterback with the number two overall pick. And it's like, dude, freaking Patriots are going to get Mac Jones. It's going to be the best thing ever for him. Because you know that's what he wants.
Yep.
Because it's his own buddy Saban, who used to be his defensive coordinator back when he was with the Bills like 20 years ago. They're going to get what they want. the entire time. He probably wanted Mac Jones, thinking, okay, yeah, Mac Jones. Yeah. Hey, Bill, what do you think about getting Mac Jones 15? Oh, well, you know, quarterback and play for Nick and. You playing on a good team, national championship.
You think he mumbles whenever he called Saban? Hey, Nick, what do you think about Mac? I'm thinking about taking him.
And Nick's like, look, you're going to take Mac Jones, all right? You're going to get a quarterback who can make all the throws, all right? He's going to do what you tell him to do. He's worried about the team, all right? He's going to do what you need him to do to win games. And you got that defense over there. All right, you got all those guys back that opted out because of COVID. You sign those tight ends, all right? You got everything you need for Mac Jones. You can put Mac in there, and Mac come in, start, and win you some games. All
I'm
right?
not going to say something bad about him, so quit asking.
I'm not going to say anything bad about Mac, so quit asking. That's what the conversation was. It was that short, and it was like, all right, we'll do that. And then he hung up the phone. And then the dog sat in the chair while they made the pick.
They still don't have weapons, though, as wide receivers.
They don't, which is weird. Which is really strange. I mean, I know they did sign one receiver in free agency, and the name escapes me right now, and it'll come back to me later. And granted, like, yeah, they needed bodies at the wideout position. And then you have Julian Edelman, who just like Julian Edelman failed a physical?
He's just like, I'm done.
That's it? Really?
Was it Jacoby Myers? Or they got Jonnu Smith.
They got Jonnu Smith at tight end, but they signed a receiver, too, and I cannot think
I've
of the
name
right now.
Kendrick – oh, they got Nelson Agholor.
Thank you. Nelson, I was like, the guy from Philly, and it couldn't come to me, Nelson Agholor.
He's never healthy, though.
Yeah. Then again, it might have just been the fact that he played in Philly, because no one in Philly was ever healthy, and I think it was just because of the fact that they all played in Philly.
That's fair.
I don't think anything to do with Agholor. That's just me. But, yeah, when you look at all this, you're like, how is this team supposed to reload? Oh, wait. Yeah, they got all the guys back that they needed, and their whole defense opted out last season, or at least most of it. They're all back now. And, oh, yeah, Cam Newton's still your starting quarterback. So Mac Jones doesn't have to start right away.
Right.
So, yeah, you don't have to be perfect to start this season because you got a lot of the elements that you need. And if you're a mobile quarterback, if you have an offense that's centered around your quarterback running with the football, you need two elements to it to make it work. One, you need a good offensive line, or at least a semi-competent offensive line. And two, you need good tight ends. Because if you have a quarterback that can run with the football, what is he going to do? He's going to take up the attention of everybody between the hash marks, whether it's the offensive lineman and even the defensive ends on the outside of the hash marks. You know the entire defensive line is paying attention to him, and so are the linebackers, and so are the safeties. All those guys straight back down the hash marks are all paying attention to what the quarterback does. Who takes that attention off the quarterback? The tight end. Mm. And they went and got two of them.
Yeah, they got Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry.
Woo Pig Suey, by the way.
That's just not even fair.
Woo Pig. I was actually working in Arkansas when he decided that he was going to go to Arkansas and like signed his letter of intent. I was working then. Like, I actually got to report that.
Really?
Hunter Henry was signing with Arkansas. Yeah. He's a Little Rock kid.
Okay.
So he was like a big in-state recruit. People freaked out about it. But, yeah, like, you have all that talent now at tight end.
And the Patriots have always been a power tight end type team.
Yes. And now you're giving Belichick two tight ends that he can work with again. And he'll spread them out and split them wide and torture people. He's going to do it again.
I look forward to watching them against the Jets.
It's going to be interesting. I'm curious what the AFC East looks like. Because I went into this season assuming, all right, it's going to be Buffalo. And I don't know anymore.
The Dolphins are actually kind of intriguing.
The Dolphins, the one thing I'll give the Dolphins credit for is that they're not doing stupid things to take themselves out of it now.
Mm-hmm.
They're actually making sound front office moves to make their team better. They drafted Jalen Waddle with the 6th overall pick. That's a smart move. Then they had the 18th, and they took Jalen Phillips, an edge rusher from the University of Miami. So they killed two birds with one stone. They got a guy on defense that they needed, and they got a kid from the U. So you know the fans are going to love him.
Right.
So that kind of helps that problem. But, yeah, they've done the right things that they needed to do. And then they drafted Javon Holland, whom a lot of people thought might be one of the best defensive backs in the draft. So Miami did a lot of things right just with those first three picks alone.
And they already had a pretty solid defense, too. Remember how
right.
much pressure they put on Mahomes whenever they played the Chiefs last season?
They made his life hell last year.
Right.
Definitely. That's
so
true.
You had a guy like Phillips, and then that corner you're talking about in Holland, or that safety, that's going to make it tough. I look at this draft and see one huge question mark. even if he wasn't on the Jets, is Zach Wilson really going to be that good?
It depends on what the Jets do to put guys around him. Because we know Zach Wilson has the arm strength. He has the arm talent. He can make all the throws, literally all the throws, even the ones that most quarterbacks should not make. Apparently Zach Wilson can make them, which is great. But are you going to protect him? Is he going to have a decent running game? Or are you going to put a defense on the field that can get him the ball back when you need him to get the ball back? You can't answer those questions, and the rest doesn't matter.
I'm going to go no for all of those when it comes to the Jets.
As of right now, knowing the Jets, the answer is probably no. So, yeah, you have to see what happens. But you give the Jets the benefit of the doubt. They had a bunch of draft picks. I thought they did some really smart things as far as being able to at least find the guys in the circumstances that they were in that could fit what they need. So I'm not mad at them for that. But, yeah, time will tell if Zach Wilson works out.
What was your favorite pick of the draft?
My favorite move, honestly, and this is probably the easy answer, is the Bears at number 11 trading up to get Justin Fields. That's the easy one.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, my favorite pick, and this is because I really, really like this kid, and the irony of it is he's going to a team that I did not want to see him go to. The Ravens at 27 taking Rashad Bateman.
Mm, I was going to say they finally got the speedster that's actually tall and not Marquise Brown.
And the Ravens' issue, because I don't know why there are people that think Lamar Jackson sucks as a quarterback. Did you see what he did the year he won the MVP?
Mm-hmm.
Did you see what he did the year he won the Heisman? And he did that in Bobby Petrino's offense at Louisville. It wasn't like just some option or spread offense. No. This is Bobby Petrino's pro-style offense that he tailored around Lamar Jackson, and he won the freaking Heisman. So yep. This guy's not stupid. He can play the quarterback position. He did that and won the Heisman. Was the second year in the league, he wins the MVP. He knows what he's doing. The problem is he didn't have a receiver that was reliable enough to get the ball to when they needed someone to catch the ball. He got one in Rashad Bateman. That kid bought out in Minnesota. They got their guy at 27.
Yep, I agree with that. And I saw, before the whole Aaron Rodgers nonsense was going down, the Packers were pretty high on Bateman.
Yeah.
To partner him with Adams.
Oh, him and Devontae together. Oh, that'd have been so great.
Yeah, but then they wouldn't be feeding Devontae as much, so I wouldn't be very happy.
We kind of like when they feed Devontae. That's our thing.
That's why we draft him in fantasy.
Hashtag feed Devontae is definitely our thing.
Shirts are coming.
Oh, yeah. The feed Devontae shirts and then the kids in pitching shirts. They're both coming. That might really be a thing. Like, people might think I'm joking, but yeah, kids in pitching, the shirts are coming. I'm telling you. Watch.
I liked that pick. I liked Cleveland getting Newsom. I was high on him. I didn't think he was going to drop all the way to 26 because he was one of the top corners in this draft.
Yeah.
But I think Dallas going Surtain or Denver going Surtain as early as they did, it screwed everything up.
It did.
Because Surtain, well, first of all, Carolina taking Horn over Surtain, it was like, all right, Carolina just went corner. So Denver was like, we got to go corner. And they took Surtain. And I know that Dallas had him eyed up. Everybody and their mother had Dallas taking him in the draft.
Did. And Dallas was in a great position. How often does Dallas, like, sit in the catbird seat? They're like, okay, we'll take Surtain. If he's not there, we'll get the best linebacker in the draft? And we need one of those two?
Because
Sean Lee just retired?
That's retired.
Okay.
So we'll take another Penn State kid that was killing it.
We'll reload again from freaking linebacker U. No big deal. It's like the one time Dallas actually did like the thing that people expected them to do and it wasn't completely idiotic. Good job, Dallas.
Right.
Good on them. Can't even argue with it.
The Jets getting Vera Tucker was a smart pick for them.
They had to do that.
I liked Arizona taking Collins because I know a lot of people were high on Collins. And I didn't want him to fall to the Steelers because I didn't want them to go linebacker. In the first round.
And they love to take freaks on defense.
Mm-hmm.
And this dude, Chuck Bednarik Award winner and Bronco Nagurski winner. So you know he wasn't no punk if he's winning these awards in FBS play. So you knew he was pretty good.
And he's going to be up there with Isaiah Simmons now to just completely dominate up front on defense.
Didn't we just talk about Tampa having a 1-1A?
Yep.
Arizona
the,
got
the
theirs.
Cardinals just did it.
And remember, the Cardinals actually did the thing that I said they should do in the offseason. They upgraded at center. They went and got Rodney Hudson,
mm-hmm.
who's a pretty good center. Arizona's actually done pretty good this offseason. I don't think they get a lot of credit for it.
They also added James Conner to the run game.
Yeah. I mean, now granted, some Steelers fans would be like, yeah, so. But, you know, for Arizona to do what they needed to make Kyler Murray's job easier, it made total sense. Oh, yeah, by the way, they also got J.J. Watt, huh?
And A.J. Green, too.
And A.J. Green.
They're doing a lot of things.
They did what they needed to do, and they know what division they're in. They know they got to deal with Seattle and Russell Wilson still. And then the 49ers, they just drafted Trey Lance, which I saw coming the entire time, because you don't trade all that draft capital for Mac Jones third overall. I don't know why people were buying that. It was Trey Lance from the door.
They got me.
So the 49ers got Trey Lance, and you're looking around this division going, wait a minute, how are we going to keep it? And then the Rams.
They got Stafford
Rams
now.
Rams got Matthew Stafford. Yep. Everybody's loading up. Arizona had to do something to try to keep pace.
It's like the NL West with the Dodgers and the Padres, except this time the entire West upgraded, and in the NL West it was just the top two teams. But I agree with you. I like the weapons that they got Kyler Murray. They still have Edmonds as their running back, but now Connor's going to back him up.
They got
Hopkins, who's a stud. They added A.J. Green, who had a terrible year, but he was playing for the Bengals, and Joe Burrow was hurt for most of the season.
And they drafted Rondale Moore from Purdue, who's a speedster.
And they have Christian Kirk, who's also a speedster. They have speed, speed, speed,
And Cliff Kingsbury is an air raid coach, so you're giving him a bunch of talent to run an air raid adapted offense. Good luck with that.
And then on defense, J.J. Watt, Chandler Jones, Jordan Hicks, Isaiah Simmons, and Zaven Collins. And oh yeah, they also have Buda Baker. Malcolm Butler.
They got freaks, dude. They got freaks who can play on defense. That's going to be a fun division. NFC West is going to be a lot of fun. But shifting gears, because we got a lot to get into. The Steelers draft. Now, here around town, especially with our own colleagues, a lot of guys had a lot to say about what happened with the Steelers draft. I tend to think that they did exactly what they needed to do. The Steelers knew they had problems that needed to be addressed. They knew they had a defense that lacked some depth. They knew they had an offensive line that lost some pieces and needed to have some places refilled, whether it was in a starting spot in the interior or depth on the outside, and they knew they needed to fix their running game. And I thought they did all of those things. And they knew they needed to add depth at the tight end position, and they did that too. I think a lot of people were thrown off because of the order that the picks came in, because the running back came first and the tight end came second, and then the two linemen came.
Right.
A lot of people would say, well, get the lineman first, and then the tight end, and then maybe the running back. But the truth of the matter is, every draft is not the same. The Steelers knew that going in, and their thought was, we can get the best running back on the board. And yes, he was the best running back on the board. Doak Walker Award winner, all-time leading rusher at Alabama. And this is a school that's put out how many Heisman Trophy winners at that running back position recently? They got that guy as their all-time leading rusher. And he tied Tim Tebow for the most career touchdowns in SEC history. In the freaking SEC. He was the best running back on the board. That's not a question.
And he fell to 24. You don't pass up on that whenever the best running back falls to you at 24.
And I know if people think that the running back position is devalued, fine. You can hold on to that theory. I don't mind it. But if you can get the guy you know you need that can do everything in your offense that you need him to do, and you know if you go to pick him again in the next round, he won't be there, I'm not mad at that.
Nope.
I'm not mad at that at all. And not to mention the fact that, yeah, they're probably going to get to the point where he needs to be re-signed, and they're going to wonder how much is he worth. You're going to ask that question. But here's the thing. Around that same time, you're going to have a different quarterback too. And your quarterback probably is not going to cost as much because you're probably going to draft that guy. So you'll be in the position where you can pay a running back a little bit more because you're not going to be paying your quarterback as much. So you might not have to worry about that when that time comes in 4 or 5 years.
Right. And maybe it's Dwayne Haskins. Who knows?
And maybe it's Dwayne Haskins. Or maybe it's somebody else. Maybe it's a draft pick next year. I don't know. But you know, we have this really bad habit of assuming that the idea we have is the right one, when the truth of the matter is the Steelers are dealing with the situation that's in front of them, not what they think the ideal is.
What bugged me about it was people that were like, well, they should have traded back, or they should have taken Tevin Jenkins, and then they should have went and got Trey Sermon. I'm like, Trey Sermon's not Najee Harris.
No.
I'm sorry, but if you think that, well, if, you know, Trey Sermon fell to whoever it was in the second round.
San Francisco in the third round.
They're like, yeah, Steelers could have gotten him. Like, I don't want Trey Sermon. Do you, like, look at the numbers. Najee Harris had 30 touchdowns last season. That's more than Trey Sermon had in his entire collegiate career. What are we talking about here?
And he was playing at Ohio State. It wasn't like he was at Western Michigan.
Right.
You're talking two teams that both played in the playoff last year.
Right.
So it's not like he played with a bunch of scrubs and against a bunch of scrubs.
Exactly.
Okay? That's the one thing. And the other thing, Trey Sermon is good. Yes. But is Najee Harris the better fit?
Yes.
Yes. Najee Harris is the better fit. And a lot of people are saying, well, you played behind the Alabama offensive line. Okay, that's true. So he broke a lot of more. He broke a lot more runs because of the guys in front of him. That's true. But you know what else happened? A lot of runs that should have gone negative didn't because he got himself out of them. The last guy that this team featured at running back that was even marginally successful for this team, he had the same ability to turn plays that should have been negative and turn them to either zero or positive yards. And his name was Le'Veon Bell. And you might get a guy who can do the same thing with, wait for it, because you complained about it so much, a better attitude. You're getting everything you want, plus the stuff you didn't like.
Mm-hmm.
Why are we complaining about this?
Exactly.
Everything you liked about Le'Veon Bell, plus without the stuff you didn't like. He's a team-oriented guy. Kevin Colbert talked about it. The thing he liked, one of the things he liked most about Najee Harris was that when him and Mike Tomlin went to Alabama's Pro Day, Najee Harris jumped in the car and drove to the Pro Day, and he wasn't even working out there.
Mm-hmm.
He went to support his teammates. They love that about him.
That leaves a good impression whenever you do something like that.
And what would an organization like the Steelers possibly want right now at a skill position? A team guy, perhaps?
A decent person that like actually cares about the team and not himself?
A dude who spent draft day at a homeless shelter that his family used to live in and had a pizza party?
Yep.
Yeah, that's a guy that makes sense to me. He checks off every single box. How often are you going to find players in the NFL draft that check off every single box? If you're using a late 20s first round pick on a guy who checks off every single box, I'm not going to begrudge you ever.
I couldn't agree more. I was just going to say that. You find a guy like that at 24, what are we complaining about? And then I take a look at, I was upset at the second pick because of the order, but after I thought about it, I was like, all right, they needed a tight end. Freiermuth is going to be pretty good. Fine.
And I knew exactly, what did I tell you? It was going to be the, we didn't expect him to be there answer.
Yep.
And that's exactly what it was.
Yeah.
And they loved Pat Freiermuth. They went, once again, Mike Tomlin, Kevin Colbert went to Penn State's Pro Day. We talked about this with the draft preview. What do you look for in their early rounds? Guys that they sent the house to go see.
Mm-hmm.
They sent the house to Alabama, even though Najee Harris didn't work out, but you know, they talked to him there. They sent the house to Penn State. And Alfredo Roberts, the Steelers tight end coach, worked Pat Freiermuth out at Pro Day. So are you surprised that they took him when they went to Penn State, sent the house, worked him out? Him and Alfredo Roberts got along famously. He loved the Steelers organization by the time he left. He was impressed with Kevin Colbert. He was impressed with Mike Tomlin. You saw what he said when they drafted him, how happy he was. And then to put icing on the cake, Franco Harris read the pick, a fellow Penn State guy. You could have had a better script if you're Pat Freiermuth. It worked out perfectly for him, and it worked out perfectly for the Steelers because as a guy who fit a need that they had and a premium at the position, because as much as we both love Kyle Pitts, the best pure tight end was Pat Freiermuth. Kyle Pitts might have been the best receiver out of the tight end crop. Pat Freiermuth was the best overall tight end in the draft. And they got the best overall running back in the draft and the best overall tight end in the draft in back-to-back picks. Once again, I'm not going to complain about that. You addressed needs, and you got the best possible guy to do it.
There was no way he was going to fall to the third round, right?
No, none. None. I was stunned he was still there in the second round. Stunned that he fell to 55.
Really?
When it got to 55, I'm like, it could be Freiermuth.
So you had a hunch that was coming.
I was preparing myself for the possibility because I knew how much they liked him.
Okay.
Because remember what I told you? I paid a lot of attention to the pre-draft process. It's the first time I'd done this in a while. But I paid a lot of attention to what they were doing and who they were talking to. And that stuff actually means something. When you go to see who guys that they're talking to or guys that they've interviewed throughout the process, you pay attention to all that stuff. At least I do. Because there's a formula with how the Steelers draft guys. It really is a simple formula. But I'll break that down later on. But it's really simple. Pro days, Senior Bowl, guys that they've interviewed, whether it was on Zoom in this case or guys that they bring to the facility in years past, they usually go with guys that they have familiarity with. They usually try to build relationships, and that's how it works its way out.
I was happy they took Kendrick Green because I had him going to the Steelers in the third round.
And here's
so
another thing.
I got one right.
The Steelers taking Kendrick Green made me feel the same way that the Bengals taking Ja'Marr Chase did, because the Bengals could have drafted a tackle. They could have drafted Penei Sewell, but said, you know what? We got our guys at tackle. We don't need that. We're confident in our guys. We're going with the guy we want. The Steelers have their guys to tackle, whether we like it or not. Zach Banner, Chukwuma Okorafor. Those are their guys to tackle. They figured we need an interior guy. So when it came to the third round, there was an interior guy on the board that they really liked, and he fit the kind of scheme that they wanted him to fit. He's a zone-blocking guy. He likes to get to the second level. He likes to take bodies out, and he's a pretty good run blocker. And he played guard, too. Who does that remind me of? The guy that they had for a decade that just retired. They just filled another need with one of the best guys they can get for what they wanted. So once again, I can't complain. I'm serious. They were filling needs with guys that they felt that they needed, and they got the guys that they wanted, not just the guys that they needed. The first three rounds, for me, I'm going into that Sunday morning. I'm doing a radio show on a Sunday morning. I'm like, look, they addressed problems. They had problems that they knew they needed to fix, and they addressed them. We can say what we want. They got what they wanted coming in the door, period.
Yep. What'd you think of what did you think about the back-to-back Texas A&M picks?
I thought it was weird because of all SEC schools to take back-to-back picks from, Texas A&M would not have been my choice. But they went to College Station and they got back-to-back guys. And getting an offensive lineman in the fourth round after getting one in the third round, it made sense to me. Dan Moore, when you heard his interviews with the media afterward, the Zoom calls, and he talked about it, he goes, look, I played on an offensive line. We got excited when they caught run plays. We were happy to run the ball. And if you're the Steelers, we're looking to fix a run game that's dead last in the league, and you already got your center, and you're looking to upgrade tackle depth, why not get a guy who likes to run the ball when fixing the run game is one of your priorities? So if that's the case, and by the way, he blocked for Kellen Mond, who also got drafted in this draft, and went in a relatively good spot, by the way, did Kellen Mond. Sounds like a pretty good situation to me. I like that.
And then I liked the Buddy Johnson pick.
Yes.
Because you had to replace Bud Dupree. You go and get another guy that was in the SEC.
and more importantly, build linebacker depth at inside linebacker. The Steelers played six different guys at inside linebacker this year. Because remember, they used two at a time in 3-4.
And Devin Bush was out for the entire year.
But they had all these guys get hurt. Devin Bush, Vince Williams, Ulysses Gilbert, Robert Spillane,
Bud.
Avery Williamson. Just the inside linebackers. Mm. They played six different guys. Marcus Allen was the sixth guy.
Yeah.
They played, and I just rattled off the other five. They played six guys and inside linebacker. And they probably weren't expected to play three of them because Avery Williamson was a midseason pickup. Marcus Allen was more like intent in case of emergency break open glass. And Robert Spillane was not supposed to see the field that much.
Right.
So you got six dudes playing the linebacker position? Yeah, you got to get depth. So Buddy Johnson made sense.
Then they traded for the round five pick, and they took Isaiah Loudermilk from Wisconsin.
Which was interesting to me because it was interesting because I thought it was a good pick for them. It scared me because Keith Butler, the defensive coordinator, says, he reminds me of a young Cam Hayward. I'm like, oh my God, don't say that so soon. That's a high, lofty situation to fill. Because Cam Hayward right now is one of the best interior linemen in the league.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a lot to put on a guy who you drafted, you traded up to draft in the fifth round. I thought that was strange.
Yeah.
But, hey, they got the guy they wanted, so it is what it is.
Funniest pick, Presley Harvin out of Georgia Tech.
Love it.
That guy is a beast. I remember seeing him on TV. I was like, wait, that's their punter?
You're like, is that dude the long snapper? He's an offensive lineman. Is he a fullback? No, he's the punter. Love it.
He's huge. But, hey, if Jordan Berry stinks and they need somebody else to punt, maybe they got their punter for the next 10 years from the seventh round pick. And how many guys do you keep after you draft in the seventh round? Not many.
Very, very few.
Right.
And him being drafted, Presley Harvin III being drafted, really sums up this whole draft process for them. And that's considering Quincy Roche in the sixth round, who was a guy who's a pretty productive edge rusher between Temple and Miami.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a guy you can put in here, and he's not going to have to start. You can mold him up a little bit, coach him up some. He can maybe rotate in at best early on. At worst, he's a backup that maybe snags himself a spot in a few years if he plays well. But if worst comes to worst, you got a guy who knows how to play the position, knows how to get to the quarterback, and you probably don't have to tell him that much for him to figure it out at the pro level. But getting back to Presley Harvin III, he rounds out this draft because those first six rounds, they got everything they needed. Whether building depth or bringing guys that could be potential starters or immediate starters. And you got Presley Harvin in third. It's like, well, we do kind of have issues at punter, so why not get the guy who won the Ray Guy Award? It makes perfect sense. And, oh, yeah, by the way, he might look like a fullback. Like, the first thing I saw from Presley Harvin III after he got drafted on social media was videos of him squatting in the Georgia Tech weight room. That was the first thing I saw. I'm like, this is the punter knocking out record squats. All right, I'm all for it. Let's do it. Why the hell not? Made sense to me.
They're going to absolutely run a fake punt and just run him up the middle. It's going to happen.
As they should. He can throw, too. He can actually throw the ball. I don't think he's Randall Cunningham throw the ball and punt good, but
right.
He can throw the ball. Ain't the worst thing in the world.
Remember when I ran the fake punt and Tomlin's like, yeah, I did that. That is going to happen with Harvin.
And they should.
I'm all for it. I hope it does.
Yeah.
So, I'll be upset if it doesn't.
Exactly. I'll be really disappointed. Like, you got that guy that you can use a punter as a freaking Swiss Army knife? By all means, do that. So I think you and I can agree. We walk away from this draft feeling at least satisfied, knowing what they wanted to do in accomplishing that goal. Goals.
I've heard so many negative things from people that I just tune it out and I go, I'm very satisfied with this draft. I'm very satisfied that they got the running back, the tight end, the center/right guard. They added to their defense, and they also got an awesome punter. I'm happy.
Here's the thing, and I'm going to say this as one of two guys in this podcast who both did mock drafts in the previous episode of said show. We do mock drafts more or less for the fun of it, for the entertainment of it. We kind of gauge where our heads are to see if we can figure out what other teams are thinking. But at the same time, we have no clue what goes into the draft process as much as a head coach who's been in that position almost 15 years and a GM who's been in that position at more than 20 with this team and was a GM with another franchise before that. I'm going to say he was director of player personnel, the other franchise before that. Kevin Colbert's been in NFL front offices for half of his life. What are we talking about?
And more often than not, he's hit a home run in the draft.
More often than not, he has at least one or two picks you go, yeah, he nailed that one. Including one of them being on the offensive line last year in the freaking fourth round with Kevin Dotson. Mm-hmm. I'm not questioning when that guy does, because he knows better than I do. Yes, I've gotten mock drafts right where I've gotten four picks right. Four. In like 4 years, I got four picks right. Javon Hargrave, Jesse James, I got to the pick. Both of those I got to the pick. Sammy Coates I had going around later, and Artie Burns I had going around later. But those are the only four picks I've ever gotten right in a Steelers mock draft. And it took, what, a decade to get those four?
It's hard, man. It's like March Madness. It's hard to predict.
It's harder to predict than March Madness, and it's harder than betting freaking baseball games. But that's a different discussion. It's a different discussion for a different time. With all that said, we talked a lot of football. I want to touch on this briefly because you mentioned it already because it happened around the draft. This Aaron Rodgers saga that's going on in Green Bay, I've seen a lot of opinions about it. I got one in particular, just one. But I know you had a lot to talk about this with because you and I both sat there and watched Aaron Rodgers light up the league last year and win MVP. And we talked about how they drafted a quarterback in the first round last year after it happened, and we talked about it during the playoffs. We're like, yeah, they drafted a quarterback in the first round, and this guy just went and did that. Like, what are they doing? So, like, the precursor to this discussion has already happened with you and me. But I knew you had a lot of thoughts about this. For me, you got a quarterback that you can't keep happy. The previous coach couldn't keep him happy. It's apparent the previous GM couldn't keep him happy, and the front office has still failed to do so. But for you, how does this all stand out for you?
It reminds me a lot of Peyton Manning with the Colts, except the fact that Rodgers isn't hurt. Like, when Manning got hurt, it was like, all right, we need to move on. We need to go and get a new quarterback for the future.
Right.
Green Bay didn't need to do that yet.
No.
Like, when they took Jordan Love, I believe I texted you and was like, why did they just take him? They have Aaron Rodgers as their quarterback.
And it's not like they just drafted a quarterback on, like, day two. Or day three.
It's a first round pick.
Round one in the 20s. If there's a crazy place to draft a quarterback, why would you do it in the 20s?
Mm-hmm.
You know you're not going to start him. You know you got a guy who's already won multiple MVPs and he's won a Super Bowl. And you're going to draft a quarterback in the 20s. What? Not to mention the fact for a franchise's previous history, it blew up in your face once already. You'll go to the well and do it again. What are you, Cleveland? What's going on right here? What is this? The Packers are making Browns moves.
They
it's
are.
It's insane.
It is. And they could have gotten him some weapons, and instead they take quarterback. Could you imagine?
Or talent on defense.
Could you imagine him watching the draft with his family, and he goes, all right, let's see who Green Bay's going to take. They did what now? What are they doing? I mean, I don't blame this guy for being angry, but at the same time, he just won the MVP last year and lit the league up and only threw 5 interceptions for Green Bay, and he's got Devontae Adams as his wide receiver. Like, why would you want to leave? Maybe he's doing, I mean, he probably is. He's probably doing this so he says, look, you either keep me or you keep Jordan Love and I'm leaving. And if you let me leave, I'm going to beat you.
He's Brady. He's doing the Brady and Jimmy Garoppolo routine.
Yes.
It's the same thing that Brady did.
Yes. So
if you get rid of him or I'm gone.
So if Denver is the team that ends up getting Aaron Rodgers, this is Peyton Manning all over again. They had Tebow. It didn't work. Manning fell right into their pocketbook, and they paid him. Aaron Rodgers is in the same exact boat right now. They have Drew Locke. They're not happy with him. Aaron Rodgers could fall right into their lap. And I'm all for it because 2 matchups a year of Mahomes versus Rodgers, sign me up.
Exactly. Now, here's the thing I want to point out. I'm glad you mentioned that he threw all of, what, 5 picks you mentioned during the season?
Mm-hmm.
Aaron Rodgers had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. 14 games in the regular season where he threw for 300 yards or better. He had nearly 3 times as many 300-plus yard passing games as he had interceptions. What? You can keep explaining it to me. You can keep telling me, oh, well, you know, he's just being spoiled. He was your league MVP! 5 picks. 48 touchdowns. 5 picks. First of all, that's the first thing. Led the league in completion percentage, 70.7% completion percentage.
For how much they threw the ball, too.
And he threw the ball 526 times.
Yep.
That is video game numbers. 48 touchdowns led the league. 5 picks. Even 1% interception percentage, which, once again, led the league. Quarterback rating, 121.5, led the league. Average yards per attempt, 9.6, led the league. QBR, which really waters it all down, still led the league, 84.4.
He let wide receivers named Valdez-Scantling, Lazard, and a tight end named Tonyan look like studs because of him. You put Jordan Love with that offense, I'm sorry, but it's not going to work.
And that offense got to the NFC Championship game and lost to Tom Brady.
Yes.
On a call that might not have been Aaron Rodgers' fault, by the way, in the fourth quarter. Because for some odd reason, they wanted to mismanage the game on top of everything else.
And they gave up a touchdown right before halftime.
And they gave up a touchdown. They had no business giving up right before halftime. They can say what they want. They're not in the NFC Championship game without Aaron Rodgers. I hear a lot of Steelers fans saying stuff about Aaron Rodgers. Oh, he needs to just stay and play on his contract. He's not even that good. He's better than your quarterback was this season. And, oh, yeah, he beat your quarterback in the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. Let's remind ourselves of that. And if you like to make the whole argument for keeping Ben Roethlisberger off, oh, how good would this team be without Ben? How good would the Packers be without Aaron Rodgers? You think you're going 13-3 in an NFC Championship game? Absolutely not. Shut up and keep him happy. You have no other choice. If you believe that the Steelers should keep the ghost of Ben Roethlisberger happy and don't think the Packers should do that with Aaron Rodgers, you're choosing not to see the truth.
Mm-hmm.
You're being dumb on purpose. Or you just don't like the man because he dated women hotter than you'll ever meet in your entire life. Either way, sit down and be quiet because you're not using logic right now.
And if they let him go, he's going to make them eat crow all the time.
Yes.
If he plays for an NFC opponent, there was talks about the 49ers, although they just took Trey Lance.
They got
Trey Lance. That's not going to happen.
Right.
But maybe... maybe he'll go to the Raiders. Maybe he'll go to the Broncos. I don't know. But whoever he goes to, if he plays Green Bay, he's gonna be like, yeah, remember me? And he's going to throw for like 500 yards.
Learn the lesson from the guy you just lost to in the NFC Championship game. Don't let that guy get away and do better with his next team than he did with you. Don't let him do that.
There was another team now that I remember. The Washington football team could be in on Aaron Rodgers. If that happens, they could go to the NFC Championship. That's how good he is. It doesn't matter what else you have.
And it kind of doesn't seem fair that an organization like Washington could have Aaron Rodgers fall in their lap.
The NFC East would go from garbage to the Washington football team and then garbage.
Absolutely. Wait. Well, garbage and Micah Parsons on defense. To be fair. But, like, it baffles me. We talk so much about how this league is a quarterback league. And we've had teams that we've made cases for to keep worse quarterbacks happy on worse teams. You take Aaron Rodgers off this roster. They are not a 13-3 team. They do not win that division. And they do not go to the NFC Championship game. I'm sorry. You don't have to like it. But it's true.
Yep.
This is not opinion here.
It's fact.
This team is not what it is without Aaron Rodgers, because this guy who led the league in just about every major category as far as passing is concerned, except maybe yards, but he did everything he needed to do and then some. Not to mention the fact, what did he do more than anything as far as consistency? He kept feeding Devontae Adams. There's a reason why Devontae Adams was one of the most productive receivers in the league last year, because the guy who won the MVP kept feeding him.
You think Devontae just wakes up every morning and checks Twitter? Is Aaron still my quarterback? I would.
Oh, the day Aaron Rodgers leaves, there will be one of those memes with Devontae Adams like Wolverine. He's like with the teary eyes. He's looking at a picture of Aaron Rodgers. It's coming. I might make it my damn self, but it's coming.
You'll be like Devontae Adams right now. Yes.
Google Devontae Adams meme.gif. Done. It's coming. It's going to happen. It really does come back down to, we just talked about Zach Wilson being set up to succeed with the Jets. We just talked about Kyler Murray being set up to succeed in Arizona. We just talked about Tom Brady getting everything back that he needed in Tampa, including beating the Packers on the way to the Super Bowl, mind you.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, Aaron Rodgers, oh, that guy complains too much. Did you see what happened when he came in the league? How Brett Favre held the Packers hostage and kept trying to stiff-arm people?
Yes.
And now they do the same thing again, and you're going to side with the other guy? This makes no sense to me. It makes absolutely no sense.
If you're Aaron Rodgers, and Green Bay tries to keep you but also keep Jordan Love, you're gone, right?
I'm done.
Yeah, you're not playing that game. You go, look, you screwed up. You need to make it right. You need to get rid of him, or you're going to lose me. And I would rather lose the pick and go, hey, I was wrong, than let a Hall of Famer leave my team.
You know what I'm saying if I'm Aaron Rodgers? Like, you guys were in the NFC Championship game last year, right? Yeah. Who got you there? I did. You went 13-3, right? Who got you there?
Mm-hmm.
I did. You won the division last year, right? Who got you there? I did. You picked 29 in the draft. You had to win 13 games to pick 29th, right? Whose fault is that? Mine. You are not where you are right now without me. So you want to go leave me behind after having arguably the best year of my career, and I've already won multiple MVPs. I've got a Hall of Fame resume, and I might have just had the best season in my career. And you're going to go with him? Good luck. I'm going.
I'm going to go host Jeopardy.
I'll go host Jeopardy. I'll go play in Denver. I'll go play in Washington. I'll become Jerry O'Connell and freaking Jerry Maguire. I'll either surf or ski. Deuces, I'm gone. The day he leaves, it's the worst day possible for Green Bay in that tenure.
Yep.
I don't know a better way to explain it.
They're no longer relevant if he leaves.
Not.
They will not be on primetime. They will not be on Game of the Week. They will not be good.
Who's left? Who's left that makes a difference on that roster without him?
Nobody. Devontae's not Devontae without Aaron Rodgers. They don't have a run game.
The run game was better than it was in years past, but they hadn't had one for years. Mm-hmm. It was better by comparison, maybe by default.
Right.
But there's no way. There's no way this roster looks anything as good, or this team is even as remotely as successful without Aaron Rodgers. There's none.
Yep.
None whatsoever. Maybe I'm crazy. I don't know.
You're not crazy.
But we still got a lot to get to. We still got to play our favorite news headline game. Is this a thing? Before time is up.
We got one more thing to talk about.
A lot has come down in the sport of hockey in recent days. So there's this two-game series with the Capitals and the Rangers. Now, there's a couple different incidents we can pick out, but I think the one that stands out the most with all of us, Tom Wilson, Artemi Panarin. You've seen the video at this point. If you haven't, go look it up. It's out there. The NHL decides, in light of everything that happened, they didn't suspend Tom Wilson. They fined him $5,000. The Rangers, having lost Artemi Panarin for the rest of the season and really don't know what to expect in the future down the road with him, they put out a statement. Hey, we're kind of disappointed in this. You had a chance to do better and you didn't. And they called out George Parros, who, by the way, during the course of his career, might have been just as likely to do the same thing that Tom Wilson did. So are we shocked at how the NHL responded with the original punishment for Tom Wilson? I wasn't. I thought good on the Rangers for speaking up. Because if you're a Penguins fan, you remember what Mario Lemieux did a while back when that whole thing went down with the Islanders. And he spoke up because of what happened to Eric Tangrady. We remember all this happening. It's happened to you before. And that's outside of the fact that Matt Cook played on this team. So you've been on both sides of this spectrum. You see how it looks from both angles. So now, with the Rangers speaking out the way they did, what does the NHL turn around and do? They fine the Rangers $250,000, 50 times as much as a guy who committed the original infraction. I tweeted about this the day it came down. Tell me you missed the point without telling me you missed the point. The NHL, this is coming off the heels of a TV deal that they just signed. They just signed a deal with Turner and ESPN to start putting NHL games on ESPN and TNT. Maybe they did this knowing that TNT will be okay with it. Because you know TNT, you know their slogan is "We know drama." Maybe that's why they did it. I don't know. Two steps forward, three steps back for the NHL. You just finally got back to where you wanted to get, where you can make money off a decent TV deal that gets your league more exposure. And do some stupid stuff like this. This is why people can't be all in on you, NHL, because you don't know how to get out of your own way.
I got a problem with the lack of leadership from the players of this league. Where are the stars at whenever it comes to what Tom Wilson did? And they say, hey, you know what? This isn't right. Like, our sport is competitive. Our sport is a contact sport. But at the end of the day, I mean, he's really seriously hurting guys.
Oh, I got the answer for that.
And everybody's silent.
I got the answer for that one.
Go ahead.
You know why the stars aren't saying anything? Because the moment the stars say stuff, they become the targets. Because the stars become whiners, and they're the ones getting teeth knocked out in their first game in the league, i.e. Sidney Crosby. Got his teeth knocked out in his first game and was labeled a whiner immediately afterwards. And that was after he scored the goal that beat the other team. But that's beside the point. But he got labeled a whiner, and the label never went away. This is why stars aren't saying anything. Because for some odd reason in the NHL, protecting stars is not a priority, and then when they speak up, they get labeled as whiners, and they're never protected afterwards. That's why the stars aren't saying anything, because they become targets.
That's a huge problem. A guy like Tom Wilson should not continue to get away with it. He's been doing this for years, and the NHL hasn't done anything to change it.
And then, after one of your member franchises puts out a statement and says, yeah, we're disappointed because you had an opportunity to fix the situation. Your response was, it's terribly unfair to criticize the head of the player safety department. If you don't do your job well, and someone tells you you're not doing your job well, it becomes terribly unfair all of a sudden. Was it terribly unfair that the Rangers decided to take matters into their own hands and start a fight off the freaking drop of the puck the next time out because they were playing the Capitals immediately afterwards? Did that seem terribly unfair? Because there's some people who like that stuff. You know what? Fine. You're probably born before 1970 anyway. I don't have a problem with that. But my thing is, you're a league that's trying to expand. You're trying to make more money. You're trying to make yourself far-reaching or better accessible. This is how you do it? By not protecting your stars, and then letting teams, after speaking out against your failure to actually punish bad behavior, take matters into their own hands. And now everybody looks bad. Because on a night when you should have had probably the best story in sports might have happened that night. TJ Oshie, first game back from losing his dad, who used to coach him, if I'm not mistaken. TJ Oshie comes back, scores a hat trick, his first game back after burying his father. That should have been the biggest story in sports that night. It should have been as big as Brett Favre lighting it up on Monday Night Football after he buried his dad. Mm-hmm. That's how big that should have been. And what happened instead? All that other crap at the beginning of the game. The fights at the drop of the puck. Them going after Tom Wilson. 15 dudes in the penalty box. Looking like a bad freshman frat party. All that happened and overshadowed that story that was TJ Oshie. Best story you could have had in all of sports that night. That should have let off SportsCenter, TJ Oshie. Hat trick after his father passes away. What were they talking about?
We didn't even hear about it.
You didn't even know about it until I texted you.
Until you told me. And you saw it in an article, right?
I saw it on a sports alert.
Yeah.
It was an alert from The Athletic.
They didn't even cover it on SportsCenter. Yeah. It was all right, Rangers, Capitals, fight.
We got the penalty box looking like a chicken coop, but we don't have TJ Oshie pulling off perhaps one of the biggest stories of the day.
This is why hockey can't get out of its own way and is not respected by real sports fans. You can like your team, but the sport in general, people aren't enjoying it.
There are stories in hockey that should be told. There are stories in hockey that are there to be told. There are moments in this game's history that should be celebrated far more than they are. But they are not, they have not been, and they might not be. Because this league refuses to change. And that's saying a lot. When MLB can figure out that they need to change before you can, the players ain't the problem. The teams ain't the problem. You were the problem. And they've had, how many opportunities have they had? The NHL, to fix the situation by just having a better head of player safety and just refuse to do it. Mm-hmm. You had Brandon Shanahan, and then GMs got mad. You had the guy who could have made the whole situation better, and it was starting to get better. But then some of the GMs got mad, and then they pushed Brandon Shanahan out. So now we're back to square one, and nothing's gotten better. And then you wonder why people won't like your sport, because your sport, in some cases, is either boring, outdated, or just flat out barbaric for no reason. And there are people who like football and they watch hockey and they're like, eh. And people, let's be honest, people watch football for the violent aspect of it for the most part. Because let's not kid ourselves. What was the one sport that really became popular in the late 17 to early 1800s right after the Civil War? It was football. And there are people who watch that sport for that very reason, the violent aspect of it, and don't mess with hockey. Why? Because stars in football are recognizable, they are marketed, and you know who they are. In hockey, do you know them as well? No, because they're not marketed as well. Mm. You should know who Sidney Crosby is. You should know who Connor McDavid is. You should know who Nathan MacKinnon is. You should know who these guys are. Their names should not be hard to come by. But they can walk down the street in certain places, and no one knows who they are because they don't know how to market them.
Right.
When you're worse at marketing your stars in MLB is you got a problem. And when you're worse at protecting players than leagues like the NFL and college football are, you got a serious problem. And you refuse to fix it. So you make your bed. Good luck. You just got all that money on TV deals. And watch your ratings hit the toilet if you don't fix anything. Good luck. Have fun with it. With that said, because Craig is looking at me like, yep, I got nothing else. With that said, we will take a break. We come back. We'll play our favorite news headline game. Is this a thing? We're going to check back in with a favorite subject. He's at it again. We'll talk about it when we come back. Episode 14, the Neil O'Donnell episode of the Sunday Morning Grind. Stick around.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Grind podcast with Greg Finley and Josh Taylor. Check us out on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, and Anchor. Also, follow us on Twitter at Sunday, M-O-R-N, Grind. That's Sunday Morn Grind on Twitter. We cover Pittsburgh sports and national sports. Be sure to tune into the podcast each and every week. Now, back to the podcast.
You hear the music. That means it's time to get crazy. It's time to play our favorite news headline game. Is this a thing? We always end the show this way. This is how we do it. Episode 14 of the Sunday Morning Grad Podcast. Josh Taylor, Greg Finley, the Neil O'Donnell episode. We got to close it out on the right note like we always do. Greg, we got a couple interesting topics for Is This a Thing? I will start with one that I think is both interesting and also kind of funny because we've talked about this before. But I'll start with, actually, an old colleague of mine, Travis Sawchick, baseball writer. You saw him in the previous one. Travis Sawchick wrote a piece for thescore.com. Baseball's replay system is breaking. How can it be fixed? We have talked about this how many times now on this podcast? So we won't even go through all the details. Baseball's replay system being broken. Still. Is this still a thing, Greg?
It's 110% still a thing. As a Mets fan, I saw it firsthand. And it even benefited them, and I still said, really?
I don't know what's worse. The fact that, like, replay has had so many instances where things have gone wrong, or that it keeps happening in Mets games.
Yes.
I don't know what's more weird.
The fact that there are still times when an umpire says, I had to guess on this one, and you're not going to review it because it's non-reviewable, that should indicate there's a problem. But I'm not even going to go there. I'm going to go to the Cardinals-Mets game. There was a doubleheader Thursday.
Okay.
No, Wednesday. Sorry. Wednesday. And the Cardinals brought their translator out to talk to...
Yes.
What is it? Kwai-Yong Kim?
Yes.
Yeah. To talk to him. And then Mike Schilt came out for a mound visit, or the pitching coach came out for a mound visit. And the Mets were like, that's two mound visits.
That's two mound visits.
They're like, no, the translator just came out. He's like, that's still two mound visits. So they called New York, delayed the game for, I'm not even exaggerating, 5 minutes.
Yeah, easily. Perhaps more.
They're still on the phone. They're like, hey, we screwed up. Like, what should we do? I don't know if New York went and got the handbook out or what, but they took 5 minutes. Umpire came back out, put his mask on, didn't say anything. They're like, the announcers were like, all right, I guess Kim's staying in the game. Like, the umpires clearly got it wrong. He should have to leave the game because that's two mound visits. But the umpire's like, you know what? That's our bad. And they're just going to let it go. What?
You and I talked about this off air. I need MLB to just do one thing. If it's them or their umpires union or whatever, just do one thing. Just make one simple assessment and admit this out loud. Look, a lot of things that are happening with the game now that are different. Velocity is a bigger thing. Exit velocity for hitters is a bigger thing. There's a lot more emphasis on throwing the ball hard or hitting the ball far, which means things are going to happen a lot faster. That means they're going to happen sometimes faster than the naked human eye, which means we can't see all of it as it happens, as accurately as needed. So sometimes we're going to need help with that. If you just admitted that, look, we can't catch all of it the first time around. Sometimes stuff happens too fast for us, and we're going to need a little bit of help to get it right. If you just admit that, just admit it. Just admit, A, we don't get it all right all the time. B, we need help. C, technology can help us do it. Instead of saying, oh, well, you know, we missed it, but we're not going to admit that we're wrong. And then when you tell us that we're wrong, we're going to get mad at you and throw you out. What is that solving?
Nothing.
What is that fixing?
It's not.
How is it making your game any better than it already is? How is it advancing it to where you could have people who want to watch it and realize they're not going to see stupid shenanigans? Like, it doesn't... Watching a baseball game should not be less effective than your idiot boss at work. And that's what it is right now. Watching a Major League Baseball game sometimes, with the way replay goes and the way umpires act, it's like dealing with your idiot airhead boss at work that doesn't want to hear a suggestion on how he can do things better. It's the same thing.
And then they toss managers when managers tell them they get it wrong. I mean,
yes.
Angel Hernandez has had a track record of being awful, and it's not changed this year. His strike zone has been miserable. He missed a call and flat out said, I guessed. And they were like, well, why didn't you review it then? And Mike Matheny for the Royals just had it with him and was like, Angel, you're killing me here. and Angel just threw him out. It's like, I'm the umpire. If I'm wrong, so be it. I'm allowed to be wrong. It's like being a meteorologist. You don't get punished for being wrong. Umpires are just allowed to do whatever they want.
three jobs where you don't get punished for being wrong. Meteorologist, umpires, and picking picks in Vegas for sports betting.
Oh, that is a good one.
You're wrong.
Oh, well.
If you're wrong 5 out of 6 times, you'll be like, I got that 6th one right, though. Really, dude? Really?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
To your point, two names that if MLB put these names on a list and said, okay, we need to fix this now, and it would change everything, Angel Hernandez, Joe West.
Yep.
Take them both out the paint. Take them both out. That's a step forward.
They're like, well, Joe West has been doing it for 35 years. That's too many because he stinks at what he does.
What do I always tell you? What's the worst reason to keep doing something?
They say because we've been doing it for this long, why change it?
That's the worst reason to keep doing it.
Yep.
Oh, Joe West has been doing it for this long. Maybe it's time for him to do something else.
Yes.
To quote Chuck Knoll when he used to let guys go with the Steelers in the 70s and 80s, perhaps it's time to get on with your life's work. Joe West, Angel Hernandez, time to get on with your life's work. Get them out.
They are bad.
Sorry.
They are really bad, and it's making the game hard to enjoy whenever they're umpiring. You're like, well, I got Angel Hernandez behind the dish tonight, so I'm not going to be happy as a fan for this pitcher tonight.
Because you don't know if your team's going to get screwed.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. Okay, yeah. I do have one now. And it was one that you sent, but whenever we didn't have our show.
Oh, yeah.
Logan Paul.
Oh, my God.
And Floyd Mayweather are going to fight. And is this a thing that you sent me? They're going to go 12 rounds and hug it out to get paid absolute bank. Dude, these boxing matches are becoming an absolute joke.
And they already have WWE theater attached to it.
Did you see what Jake Paul did the weigh-in?
Slapping off the hat? Yeah.
Like, hey, I got your hat.
By the way, he's already barred from ringside. Look, he's using wrestling rules now. What's next? You're going to hang him above the ring in a shark cage? I told you from the beginning this is going to be shenanigans. They're going to make a ton of money off of it. So to answer your question, yes, it's a thing.
Is being a boxer starting to become like the easiest way to make money?
It might be.
You're like, hey, you know what? We can make it look like we're beating each other up, but if we go 12 rounds, we're all going to get paid, and we don't have to knock each other out. There's no way that Floyd and Pacquiao were like, look, like Floyd was like, I could easily knock you out. But instead, let's go 12, make everybody be like, oh, we paid for the 12 rounds. We're happy we did that. And we each get our money.
There are a lot of people that get on my case because I talk about wrestling on the radio sometimes. Let me throw this out there. If you're okay with watching stuff like this with Logan Paul and Floyd Mayweather, if you're okay with the shenanigans that's going on with the NHL that we already talked about, and you think wrestling is stupid? How are they not the same thing?
At least they get to watch a guy get thrown through a table or choke slammed. I mean, that's more exciting than back and forth punches for 12 rounds.
And most of them aren't back and forth punches that land.
Yeah.
Because like 80% of them don't.
They get blocked.
they get blocked or they get ducked and then they end up hugging it out for like a grand total of like 2.5 hours.
And I got
no.
And I got Tessitore going, what a hit! He might have got him! And then he's fine.
No. Like absolutely not. I'll take Jim Ross going, my God, over this stuff any day. Sorry.
I'll take Shane jumping off the top of a cage, breaking his body doing it through a table, then watching guys trade punches. Sorry.
You can say what you want, but when Braun Strowman chokeslams Shane McMahon from the top of a steel cage, he felt that at the bottom.
Yeah.
Period.
There's nothing fake about it. Yeah. It's more staged now with boxing than it is with wrestling.
But yes, I'll answer your question for you. This being an absolute joke where they make money to hug each other for 12 rounds, it's a thing.
Yep. Okay, I got one more, and then you can take the last two.
All right, go for it.
The NFL draft, we talked about it earlier. Remember in week 17 whenever the Eagles were playing against the was it the Washington football team or was it the Cowboys? They were playing that week 17 game and Doug Peterson just like pulled Jalen Hurts.
Yeah.
Started pulling his starters.
It was Eagles and Cowboys, I think.
Cowboys. And people were like, why is he doing this? Like, doesn't he want to win the game? And
nope.
It was for draft pick for the draft.
Pretty much.
And to screw the Giants.
That too.
And on top of that, in the draft, the Eagles traded up right in front of the Giants.
Yep.
And they went ahead and took a wide receiver, one that the Giants had their eyes on.
Yep.
So my question to you is, the Eagles just having vendetta to screw the Giants as much as they possibly can by taking DeVonta Smith after blowing it in Week 17 to screw the Giants even more for a draft pick, is this a thing?
It's a thing. It's absolutely a thing. We've seen it before. We saw the Ravens do it to the Steelers. We've seen them do it. The draft Max Williams, whom the Steelers apparently had an interest in. Of course we've seen it. Of course it's a thing.
It was the Washington football team.
It was Washington.
20-14 in Week 17.
Because that's right, because it helped Washington like win the division.
Yes.
That too. It's a thing. Why it's a thing, I don't know, but it's a thing. It is what it is. And to the Eagles, and for the Eagles, hell, well played.
They got DeVonta Smith, and the Giants were like, wait, what? And they took Kadarius Toney.
Right. Like, if you're the Eagles, it's like, it worked out for us. So, yeah. They're not mad. I mean.
So, will there be tensions now whenever the Giants and Eagles
play? Oh, there
play?
Should be. If I'm the Giants, I'm.
You're not happy.
I'm super pissed off. That would be great. Actually, I might want to see a Giants-Eagles game next year. You couldn't have paid me to see one of the last three seasons. I might want to watch one now. It's crazy. All right, we gotta close this out with one of our favorite people to talk about.
Oh, saving the best for last.
Especially in this segment of the show. We've already talked about him in, what, two previous episodes? If there's a leaderboard for people we talk about and this is a thing, this guy is now the clubhouse favorite. Of course, there was a lot of discussion throughout the course of the week, and this is really a non-sports related story, but it kind of became one by default. Bill and Melinda Gates, their announcement of their divorce came down earlier in the week.
They're having the most expensive divorce settlement in the world.
It's going to be up there. It's going to be up there. Because we've seen some expensive ones already, but this one's going to be good. Because Jeff Bezos got divorced. Mm-hmm. Huge divorce settlement. This mm-hmm. one's coming, too. It's coming. Bill and Melinda Gates. There are a lot of tweets and stuff about it, like of guys talking about shooting their shot with Melinda Gates. And honestly, if you're a single man, I'd shoot my shot with Melinda Gates too if I was single. I'm just saying. I'm not. No shame in your game. I ain't mad at you. That's all I'm saying. Anyway.
You know how old she is?
How old?
She's only 56.
56 years old, and she's already one of the biggest philanthropists in the world. So there's that too. And so is Jeff Bezos' ex-wife. She just became one of the biggest philanthropists in the world. So there's that. But there was also a big announcement of people splitting up not too long ago. Alex Rodriguez and Jennifer Lopez. And who was the one that told us that this split up would more than likely happen? It was the one and only Jose Canseco. And he did it via his Twitter account. And he's at it again. Jose Canseco tweeting out, Melinda Gates and Alex Rodriguez will be publicly dating by the end of the summer. Greg, for pageantry's sake and the sake of the show, I must ask you, is this a thing?
If Jose Canseco is predicting it, it's got to be a thing.
You gave the same answer I would.
Because he already called that A-Rod and J-Lo were going to go to Splitsville, so why wouldn't this be right?
And then when it happened, my man took a lap. Like, took a lap when it happened. Jose Canseco, easily in the running for 2021 Hater of the Year. He is my pick right now. If I got to vote for Player Hater of the Year in 2021, it is Jose Canseco.
He's got one of the best Twitter accounts. He wakes up, he trolls A-Rod. Have a great day, everybody else except Alex Rodriguez.
Unbelievable. I don't get it. This dude, killing it. Absolutely killing it. I don't know if this is a thing.
But you kind of hope it is.
I kind of hope it is. Because if it is a thing, first of all, we're going to talk about it. Mm-hmm. There's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Second of all, Jose Canseco might be a wizard. If you can wrap your mind around that. Just imagine if it was a thing. Just imagine what it might do for Jose Canseco.
I mean, he's just going to, yeah, got another one.
That's all I'm saying. Like, at that point, you got to give him a show of some sort. You got to give him like a reality show, like a dating show. You got to put Jose back on the map. That's all I'm saying.
What's he doing now? Is he just trolling A-Rod for life? Is that all he's doing?
Well, there was a time he was doing celebrity boxing matches. He was getting paid to hug a bunch of dudes in a ring. And then one time he sent his twin brother in his place, and they figured it out, and he got sued for it. Oh, you didn't read that story?
No.
Oh, you gotta go back and read that story. Go look it up. Jose Canseco was doing like charity boxing matches, and like, it might not have been a boxing match, it might have been something else, but he sent his brother to do this appearance for him, and they're like, okay, you're not Jose. Because his twin brother, Ozzy, looks just like him.
Dude.
Yeah. You gotta look that story up.
That's incredible. Yeah. That's such a Jose Canseco. You know what? I'm just not feeling it tonight. Hey, Ozzy, you want to just pretend you're me?
Jose Canseco is the messiest dude ever.
But we love it.
Oh, yeah. He's incredibly messy. I love it, though.
Well, is this a thing might just turn into what did Jose Canseco do this week? If it's not already.
I'm cool with that. I'm actually okay with it. I did not think I'd... 6 months ago, I'd have been like, why would we do that? Now, okay, that works. I'll do it.
So when Jose Canseco walks past a tree and mistakes a croissant for something like a bird... That's whenever we just go all in, right? That's whenever we have to just call him and be like, dude, you're coming on our show.
If Jose Canseco ever mistakes a croissant in a tree and mistakes it for a bird, we're done. We will have nothing left to talk about. Because the end-all be-all would have just taken place, and there would be no reason for us to ever discuss anything in front of a microphone ever again. Because every freaking possible scenario would have already happened.
So
we're done.
So it'd be the end game.
It'd be the end game. That's it. It's Doctor Strange looking over at Iron Man and putting up the one finger. That is Jose Canseco finding a croissant in a tree and mistaking it for an animal. That's it.
That's the one result that shuts down our podcast.
It's the one thing in 4 million possible outcomes that puts us out of business. We're done. Good night. That's what it would take.
Could you imagine if A-Rod and Melinda Gates actually become a thing? Like, if you see it on the news, you're like, Jose Canseco called it. Like, that's your reaction, right? You're not going to be like, ah, good for A-Rod. You're going to go, Jose Canseco is a genius.
What do you think the first thing I'm going to do is? I'm going to pick up my phone and hammer out in all capital letters, it's a thing. I'm going to send that directly to you immediately. And my wife will be like, you're texting Greg, aren't you? Yep. Why? Because Jose Canseco was right. It's a thing. And she'll just look at me and shake her head like, you're an idiot.
So there's now three things that we're hoping for in 2021. A-Rod to date Melinda Gates, so Jose Canseco's right. Jose Canseco to find a croissant in a tree and mistake it for a bird.
Yes.
And for you to have a sit-down with Ben Cherington and discuss kids and pitching.
Two of those things are probably likely to happen.
So you're saying the croissant one's not going to happen? A-Rod and Melinda Gates likely to happen, and you and Ben Cherington likely to happen.
The Ben Cherington kids and pitching conversation will happen. It's going to happen. It's just a matter of when.
We need the audio, and we need to run it on this program.
It's going down. And I'll probably have to give them a lot of background. Like, hey, look, I don't know if you ever paid attention to anything I've said, but this is what I'm talking about. And then he'll be like, you're insane. But that's okay.
Look, man, if Shelton can do a weekly appearance with Ron and Joe... I think Ben Cherington can do a sit-down with you about kids and pitching.
I just need 5 minutes to talk about kids and pitching with Ben Cherington. That's all I'm saying. I think that's a fair request.
And that's no disrespect to Ron and Joe, but Starkey, he has his quirks, and I've heard how he talks to Shelton, and it's gold. It's radio gold.
But Joe's the one that makes it interesting, so I'm okay with that.
Yes.
All I'm saying. But yeah, two of those three things are likely to happen. Definitely the kids in pitching, and definitely the Melinda Gates and Alex Rodriguez.
Dude, like...
The only thing better than Alex Rodriguez getting together with Melinda Gates would be if Aaron Rodgers got together with Melinda Gates.
What if Jose Canseco takes his shot with Melinda Gates?
I would if I was him! If I'm Jose Canseco, I'm shooting my shot with Melinda Gates. And then be like... And then when he gets her, be like, good night to everybody except for Alex Rodriguez.
I win.
Once again, end game. Done. We're done. We have nothing else to talk about. Everything has happened. It's too late.
We can't do another topic either. We already did Jose Canseco. That is it. The show is over. What number did he wear in baseball?
He wore 33 for the most part.
When we get to episode 33, we are dedicating it to him. I will find some highlights, like whenever the ball went off his head and went out of play for a home run.
Yes.
And we will dedicate the show to Jose Canseco because he has become the Sunday Morning Grind podcast hero.
He's the second coming of Bear Woods.
Yeah, I think he might be better than Bear Woods.
Yeah, he's the gift that keeps on giving. He's definitely the gift that keeps on giving, like, without question.
He continues to provide us content to talk about. And I don't think anybody else cares about this guy, but you and I, we live for this stuff.
For the record, we're 14 episodes in. We may have nothing else to talk about over the next 18 episodes. Now we have to find 18 episodes worth of content just to get to the 33rd one. We're now locked in.
It will be an ode to Jose Canseco.
Yes.
Is this a thing? Will only be about Jose Canseco.
This has now become the third biggest commitment in my life. Number one being to my wife, number two being to my son, and number three is getting to episode 33 of this podcast just so we can commit it and dedicate it to Jose Canseco. It's locked in.
Oh, dude, if I mean, I'm going to try. I'm going to try to slide into those DMs and be like, dude, is there any way you can give us just 10 minutes of your time? We have so many questions, and we look at you as the mascot to our show now. You continue to provide us with content. Would you just give us 10 minutes of your time, and we just want to talk to you on our podcast.
We sit in awe of your accomplishments.
If we can book Jose Canseco, episode 33 might be the end game.
Yes, that might be our last episode, and then we pull a John Elway, and we walk off as champions of the podcast. We're done. So we're totally doing that. With that said, about being the show being over and having run out of stuff to talk about, that's exactly what's happening right now. We got to wrap it up here. Episode 14 is in the can, and we might have just set the bar so high for the next 18 that we may never reach it. Once we get to 33, the rest won't matter. We will talk to you guys next week. This is the Sunday Morning Guy podcast. Follow me on Twitter, Josh Taylor HD. Follow Greg at the GFen. Follow the show at Sunday MRN Grind. Talk to you next week.